Welcome to Learning from Smart People. I'm your host, Josh Oliver. Today, we're flipping the script. Instead of my dad, Rob Oliver, interviewing guests, I'm actually guest hosting and interviewing him. Rob Oliver is an award-winning speaker, best-selling author, and a host of a fantastic podcast. From a young age, my dad learned the value of storytelling as a way to entertain, educate, and enrich relationships. Today, he uses the power of story in his books, as well as his speaking engagements. He encourages others to share their stories and expertise by becoming an author. Dad, thanks for joining me on the show.
Dude, it's fun to sit on this side of the microphone. Thanks for hosting.
All right, let's get right into it. So first off, I'm just wondering, what were the early influences that got you interested in storytelling?
My mom's side of the family comes from Virginia, and I kind of claim my Southern heritage with this. There was nothing like going down to my mom's family and sitting around at the dining room table, and everybody is telling stories, and they all laugh. And like, it was a fight over who got to tell what story, and the story about what embarrassed who and who did something silly. And my grandmother on that side of the family was just an amazingly colorful person, and she had more stories. To me, what I saw from just being a kid was whoever has the best story gets to be the center of attention. And like, of course, as a kid, it's like, all right, I want to learn how to do what they're doing so that I can be part of this and that I can make everybody laugh and that everybody will pay attention to me.
That's awesome. So outside of your family members from Virginia, who would be some of your favorite storytellers?
Well, it's interesting. My favorite storyteller actually was my Uncle Jesse. Unfortunately, he passed away a number of years ago, but he was the only brother in the whole family. So there was, my mom comes from a family of six. He was the only brother, and the girls all just adored him. And he was the guy, he told funny jokes, and everybody loved him and thought he was the best. Apart from him, I mean, my dad, is a speaker, he's a preacher. So I heard him tell countless numbers of stories. One of the guys that he spoke with a lot is a guy named Gene Higgins, and he told stories. And Gene is a riveting storyteller. He has all the details. He's got all this kind of information. Like, you listen to him tell a story, and you are somewhere between like sitting back and just mesmerized and sitting on the edge of your seat and wondering what's going to happen with this story. The other most kind of influential storyteller to me was, again, part of my Southern heritage, a guy named Jerry Clower. And he was a comedian, kind of, in that he just told funny stories. And I loved listening to his stories. And to me, they made me laugh. They made you cry. It was cool. His stories were all about real life and all about things that happened. And now, this is how old I am, Josh. He was doing albums. And every album that he did, at the end, he would share a story that had a point. So a lot of his stories were funny, but they were also, he had stories that were, valuable and taught life lessons. For example, he told a lot of stories about going hunting and about hunting dogs and all this kind of stuff. One of the stories that he tells is one day they're out with a young hunting dog, and they're teaching it. As the dog is running through the woods, it comes across a saw, and it actually cut its leg on the saw, and it was bleeding profusely. Well, they wrapped the leg up and they took the dog into town to the vet. But the problem was that in the little town that he lived in, there's only one vet, and the vet had an office above the local pharmacy. It was evening by the time that they got there. And when they went to go to the vet, like, he wasn't there. And so they're in a panic. And the pharmacist sees them, and it's his pharmacy. And he says to them, like, what's going on, boys? And they say, we've come to see the vet. And we need help with our dog. And he says, well, like, I'm sorry, but the vet is actually out of town. He won't be back until tomorrow. But he says, let me take a look at the dog. He says, all right, I've got a little bit of gauze here. I've got a couple things. I can help you stop the bleeding. and you leave the dog here with me. I'll take care of the dog until the vet gets here tomorrow, and then he'll take a look at him. And he says, that's exactly what happened. And the vet looked at him, got him all sewed up, and I don't remember what the dog's name is. I think the dog's name was like Little Red. And Jerry ends up the story by saying, like, Little Red lived to hunt again. But his point was this. He said, for the rest of my life, I've understood that that's how you treat kids who are having problems. And he said, for the rest of my life, I'm going around and I'm looking for the kid with the hurt dog to treat him like that pharmacist treated me, to let him know that your problems are important to me, and I'm going to do whatever I can to help you get through whatever issues you are. So that's kind of the storytelling background that I've got.
So why do you like telling stories so much?
Well, Josh, you know this, and it's unfortunate for you. I love to make people laugh. And so I know more jokes, especially like bad, punny, corny jokes than any one person should have. For those of you that don't have the good fortune of being able to see this, which is everybody except me and Josh, he's over here and he's shaking his head.
Well, sometimes we're not sure if the point of your jokes is to make people laugh.
Well, yeah, the point is to try and make people laugh, but only people that have the same sense of humor that I do. So, yeah, I love to share a story that just lightens the mood, lightens the atmosphere. But I also think stories are something that bring people together. Because when I tell you a story about what's going on in my life, it's likely that you can relate and you can feel the same emotions that I felt. It's a way of connecting us as humans. My story likely has a corresponding your story. Or even if it doesn't, you feel the emotions that I felt. We have a connection through story. The other piece is that when I am doing a presentation, I love to use a story because people like stories. And maybe this is my bias because it comes from my dad being a preacher. I sat through more sermons than any one person can count. Like, I was in church on Sunday. Usually, I was in church 3 times on Sunday. I was there for the morning worship service. I was there for Sunday school. And then in the evening, there was a gospel service. And then on Wednesday night, I was there for a Bible study. And my dad had special series of services. Like in the summer, I was with him all the time. And he's having services every single night, all summer. I listened to so many messages. And you know what piqued my interest? He would talk about different things and I could zone out. But when he started to tell a story, my ears perked up. And I was like, okay, I want to hear the story. And half the time, I would just listen to the story and I, you know, didn't even listen to what his point was with the story. But I knew that as a speaker, when another speaker told a story, I listened. And so I learned when I'm speaking, when I tell a story, people listen, especially when it's a personal story. It's something that I'm sharing with them about me and about my life. And then the fun thing about that is that I'm able to take that story, relate it to them. I'm able to say, this is what I learned from it. This is how it applies to humanity in general. And here is how we utilize the lessons that we learned from that story to make a difference in the world. And that's really the fun part of it for me, is that the story is the springboard for the learning.
On a more serious note, with more like moving stories like you've been talking about, why do you think it's more important for other people to tell their story?
Well, I mean, listen, I think that everybody has stories to share. And what always kind of concerns me is this. I made this analogy a couple weeks ago, and it makes sense to me. When you have a computer and you get a new computer, you stick a USB drive in there and you download all the stuff from the old computer onto the USB drive. And then you stick that in the new computer, you download everything from there. And now everything that was on the old computer is now on the new computer and you haven't lost anything. People aren't like computers. When people pass away, there's no way to download all of the experience and all of the wisdom that they have. And so to me, I think that people telling their stories is a way of passing on experience, passing on wisdom, passing on history that otherwise would die with them. I think it's really important for people to be able to share what they've learned in their life and for other people to learn that. And then that story becomes a part of their experience and they've learned from it. And so to me, it's really important to understand that your story is a way of giving a part of yourself to the people that are listening. And as they absorb that, as they take that in, they're benefiting from it. And it helps so that your wisdom doesn't just go away on the day when you breathe your last.
So as the author of multiple best-selling autobiographies, why do you think it is so valuable for other people to put their story in written form?
I think that really follows up on exactly what I was just talking about, because there's a way to, you know, you tell your story. And Josh, here's my time. I get to question you. How many stories do you think you have heard me tell in my lifetime?
Well, if we do some quick math here, I'm 18 years old. I can't do that quick of math, but I'm going to put it around 1 million stories.
Okay. And it is very likely that you can't remember all of them. All right.
I've forgotten a few.
Yeah. By taking your story and putting your story into written form, it solidifies it. It makes a tangible copy of it that's going to stay with you. Your memory and my memory is, you can't possibly remember all the stories that you hear. But when it comes to putting something in a book, when you write the story down, then it becomes something that can be passed along. And I think about this, for me, I'm thinking about, okay, I've gone through a lot of experience with my spinal cord injury, with living with a disability, with learning what life is all about. I want that to be something that other people can benefit from. So I write that down. Here's what's awesome about it. And that is, by writing my story down, the people that don't sit at my dinner table to hear me tell all of the stories, no matter how funny or lame they are, the people that aren't at my dinner table are able to hear the story that I have shared. Or the people that are coming to listen to me do a presentation are able to find out more about me, or able to find out more about the story that I told. And it's a way of furthering that concept of giving yourself to other people. You're making a permanent record of it. Listen, it's not just about telling the story of your life, because I hope that not everybody has gone through what I've gone through, okay? I hope that not everybody has these kind of life-altering experiences. To me, everybody has stories, everybody has something. And even the name of this podcast, Learning from Smart People, the idea is you can learn from everybody. Everybody knows something about a topic that I don't know. And so because of that, I am able to learn from anybody that's around me, anybody that I listen to. And so many times we don't even realize the expertise that we have until we start talking to somebody and they're like, I didn't know about that. And so taking what you know and writing it down and putting it into the form of a book is a wonderful way to share that. And it can be shared not just locally, but it can be shared globally. You put your book on Amazon and people around the world can buy it. It's really cool to me.
To go off the show sheet a little bit, would you say, so when you say putting your story into written form, you're talking about putting it into a form to put in front of people, right?
Yes. So, I mean, there's different ways to do that. Obviously, if it's a personal story, write a letter to somebody, okay? And writing a letter to them and sharing a story with them is one way to get that out there. But no, I'm talking about more of a written form for kind of basically public consumption.
Right.
Although I would encourage like grandparents to sit and write things out, because the wisdom that you have, the wisdom that you've accumulated, is something that your grandchildren can benefit from. And I don't want to be morbid when I talk about this, but like all of us are mortal and have to deal with the fact that one day we're not going to be here. And so for, you know, the way that things operate now with print shops that are willing to do small batches of books, you could write down your experiences, write down your life, and, you know, share what it is that you want your grandkids to learn from what you've gone through, and get that printed up in a way that you can distribute, you know, a dozen copies just to your family. And that's a wonderful way to give a part of yourself to them, and something that will stick with them forever, even when you're not there. So yeah, anybody, everybody has got a book in them. Everybody's got a story. Everybody's got something that they can share.
So for those people looking to write a book, potential authors, what insight can you provide for them as they start their journey?
Well, I think about this. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, right? And I've got a story for you, which should come as a complete surprise. Total shock, right? Yeah. My friend, Big John, is a recovering alcoholic, cocaine addict, heroin addict, and is celebrating 5 years of sobriety. And in September, I think it'll be 6 years of sobriety. And what he has told me is that he does not have 5 years of sobriety, almost 6 years of sobriety. What he has is 5 times 365 days of sobriety. And in some ways, what he has is 24 times 365 times 5 years. So he has a series of hours of sobriety. And those hours come into days of sobriety. And the days of sobriety come into years of sobriety. And, you know, by God's grace, those years of sobriety become a lifetime of sobriety, you know? So, first of all, writing a book seems like a really daunting task. And it can be overwhelming. And so my thought is, it starts with a concept. You've got to figure out, okay, what is it that I want to write about? And then who do I want to write to? Who's my audience? And then what does my audience need to learn? And then what is the purpose for my writing a book? And then as you have that and you answer those questions, that really almost forms the structure for the book. Once you have determined who you're writing to and what you're going to share with them, then it's just a matter of you kind of create an outline of what's there. And this is the beauty of it. You don't write a whole book at once. You write a book one chapter at a time. And so my first book, Still Walking, I literally wrote in sections, and the sections were that you guys were little. And so between the time that you went to bed and the time that, and my attendant came over to help me get in bed at night, I usually had probably an hour or an hour and a half. And so every night I sat down and was basically inputting a story for an hour and a half into the computer. And that's how the book came about. It wasn't written all at once. It was written over the course of time.
You kind of touched on it, but can you give any more details to the process of writing a book?
Yeah, so, I mean, I kind of touched on this a little bit, but there's more to it than just getting your story on paper. Because once you have your story on paper, you've got to get it edited. Because as good a writer as anybody is, you're going to make mistakes. There's going to be things that you do that they're not going to come out well. Or people aren't going to be able to understand it, or, you know, it's going to be something that it needs work. Okay, so the process then of taking what you have written and getting it into a book is even beyond that. So it starts with getting it edited. And then You also then need to get it formatted. You need to get a cover for your book. And then there's the whole concept of, all right, once I have a manuscript that I'm happy with, then you format it. And I mean, there's little stuff to think about, okay? For example, I got a self-published book the other day. And great book, great content, but there were details that were missed in it. For example, every chapter starts on the right page, okay? So that's an odd-numbered page. All chapters start on odd-numbered pages. But this book, the guy had written, and his story or his chapter didn't end on an even-numbered page. It ended on an odd-numbered page. So you end up with a blank page in the middle of your book. And like, it's not a real big deal, but you have two choices. If I was the editor, I would have said to him, listen, you've either got to shorten this chapter up and bring it down so that it ends on an even numbered page, or you've got to add more material to this chapter so that it ends on an even numbered page. And you don't end up with blank pages, because people are buying a book and they don't want to buy a book full of blank pages. They want to feel like they've got, you know, a high quality product in their hands. So there's that element of it. And then once you've kind of completed the book, there's the whole process of, what do you do with it? Are you going to try and find a publisher? In this day and age, there's self-publishing, there's print on demand. There's just so many different options that are out there as to what you can do with your book. So that's kind of the process. It's writing, editing, getting it all put together as far as formatting and cover, and then figuring out how you're going to get it printed.
I don't know. You pretty much covered it. The next question we were going to talk about is what happens once the book is written.
Yeah. So this actually goes a step further than that, because once you have a book in hand, right, you've decided you've got a publisher, then you've got to publicize the book. You want to sell copies of the book, because writing the book is actually the easy part. Marketing the book is the hard part. And so you've got to get out there now, and you will have, hopefully, your friends and family all buy a copy of the book. But what else are you going to do with it? How are you going to market it? Are you going to go and do speaking engagements specifically to sell books? Are you going to get on the radio? Are you going to do podcasts? Are you going to, like, what are you going to do in order to sell the books? Because that's where the money is. It's in selling books. It's not just in writing books.
Definitely. When you say everybody has a book in them, which you said a couple questions ago, what exactly do you mean?
I mean, everybody has experience that they can share. Everybody has something that they can give to other people. And I think about this not just from a life story, but I think about it from a business experience too. So, like a real estate agent, okay? A real estate agent has the experience of having sold a number of houses. So when they go into a new potential client, if they are able, they've got a book now, and that talks about, these are my experiences. These are the frequently asked questions that home sellers have. If you're selling a home, you know, you're able to put that into a written form. And now all of a sudden, when you go into the client's home, you're able to stand out from all the rest of the agents. All the rest of the agents that are coming in and trying to be their real estate agent, they hand them a business card and a packet of information. You hand them your business card and you hand them a book. And the book is questions that every seller has answered, right? Now, who stands out? You do. You're the authority.
Of course.
Right? And that's, I mean, the first part of the word authority is?
Author.
Exactly. So everybody's got a book in them. Everybody's got something to share.
All right. So where can people get more information about you?
Okay. So if people are interested in writing a book, if people are interested in learning more about the process of doing their own book, telling their own story, sharing their expertise, you can check out my publishing company. It is ix-press.com. And The reason it's called Roman numeral 9 press, and the reason is because Roman numeral 9 is IX, and if you run it all together, it's IX press. And so it's, I express my thoughts, I express my feelings, but it's IX-press.com. Check me out there. Or, you know, check out my, I've got a bunch of other websites you can find me.
All right, great. So I've heard that you have a special offer for our Learning from Smart People listeners. Tell me about that.
So anybody out there that's listening and you're thinking, you know what, I would love to write a book. Or if somebody's told me I should write a book, or even you've thought, you know what, my parents are older or my grandparents are older and I would love to interview them and get their information in a book. Anybody that's interested in doing that, I will give them a 20-minute, absolutely free consultation. There's a form on the IX Press website. Fill that out. We'll set up a time and we can talk for 20 minutes. I can listen to what you're doing. I can give you some pointers and hopefully get you headed in the right direction to share your story.
Sounds like a no-brainer to me. All right, before you go, it's time for everyone's favorite part of the show, the three questions to establish your humanity. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, my sister wrote these, just for all you out there wondering. First question, what was your favorite cereal when you were a kid, and do you still eat it?
So my favorite cereal when I was a kid was Cocoa Puffs. And the reason why I loved Cocoa Puffs was because it was chocolatey and it was wonderful, but it also had the side effect that the cocoa powder that was on it turned your milk into chocolate milk. So you ate all the cereal, and when all the cereal was gone, you got to drink the chocolate milk that was left over. And no, I don't still eat Cocoa Puffs. And the only reason is because I'm on a diet, okay? And so I'm trying to watch my carbs, and Cocoa Puffs definitely are not keto friendly.
I'm going to go with you just became a man and moved on from sugary breakfast cereals. Second question, what is the one food that will always get you to come off this diet that you're on?
I'm not going to go with a specific food. I'm going to go with a place, okay? And that place is Ocean City, New Jersey. Ocean City, New Jersey will get me to come off of my diet, because when we go there, there's Manco and Manco pizza. There's monkey bread. There are Brown's donuts. These are all the things that you've got to say, like, no diet is worth keeping when you have these options available.
Hey, vacation calories don't count. Last question before we get out of here. What was your favorite vacation that you ever took, and why?
I don't know if I have like a favorite vacation.
Ocean City.
Well, actually, that's where I was going. And my favorite vacation in Ocean City was actually the worst vacation ever. And we went on vacation. I forgot my clothes. I forgot my supplies. While I was there, I ran over my own foot and had to go to the hospital. I lost my cell phone while I was there and spent the whole day. It was a completely wasted vacation for me. The only thing I got to do was take the kids out to play mini golf. And even then, there's only one accessible course on the whole boardwalk. And we went there, and it's lame, right? And we did this. I felt pretty bad about vacation. We got home, and my father-in-law asked Josh. He said, Josh, like, what was your favorite part of vacation? And he was like, I think playing golf with my dad. Right? And I was like, dude, that was the best vacation ever.
That really was my favorite part of the vacation. I can vouch for that still. All right, Dad, thanks for being on the show. To everyone listening, I encourage you to subscribe. If you could leave a 5-star review, that would be amazing. And also follow us on social media. Dad, I'll let you get the closing honors.
Hey, everybody. Remember, when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.